Greetings, Gopher fans. The Daily Gopher Football Podcast back again for another week. I am Jeffrick, joined, as always, by the one, the only, J.D. Mill. How are you doing, J.D.?
Doing very well. Thank you for asking.
You're quite welcome. Quite welcome. Still another week. A week like now. Really, we'll be footballing it up is what we'll be doing. Gophers will be live and in action out in Vegas, baby Vegas. It's hard to believe we're only a week away now.
Yeah, we should be a week from this moment. We should be about halfway into the first quarter. And my only concern at this point is, will I be able to hold off drinking long enough that evening after work to be able to be still conscious at this point?
It's getting off of the work and then not having the game start till 10 does pose a bit of an issue that way. So there's going to have to be some self-restraint showed by a few people.
Well, and the question
Tien most notably, but I mean for the rest of us as well.
Absolutely. Well, and the other question is like nap or no nap. I mean, realistically,
well, there's always time for a nap, I think.
But listen, like I'm not gonna fake it here. Like I'm pretty much like I'm in bed between 10 and 11, maybe 11:30 every night of the week, pretty much.
Yep.
During the week, so I mean, this really is pushing me past my bedtime. So, I mean, you know, you work till 5. You know, for the average Gopher fan, you work till 5, you get home 5:30, maybe 6. You got to eat dinner. You know, when is it? I mean, do you have time to fit in a nap?
Oh, I think there's definite nap potential between like 6:30 and 8:30 kind of thing. Okay. I think you could squeeze in a decent nap in there if one chose.
And you know, you and I have never talked about this, but are you like a solid like? Like, are you a power nap guy, or are you like a I'm just gonna sleep for like 2-3 hours kind of nap guy?
I'm not much of a napper, but when I go, I go. I mean, okay. I go all out when I nap.
Sure. See, I'm the same way. I'm like I'm gonna avoid a nap, but if I feel like I need a nap, I'm just going to bed for a couple of hours. That's how I am. So anyways, I was just curious what your napping strategy might be next Thursday, but
it's one to consider. I think it's good we've got time between now and then to figure it out, because it's an important game. It's Gopher season opener. And by the way, for those listening and those in the Twin Cities or thereabouts, if you don't get that CBS whatever the heck channel the game is on, come to Buffalo Wild Wings in Roseville. We'll be there. We're throwing a good old TGG Gopher viewing party. Buffalo Wild Wings, get there about 9:30-ish, maybe 9:45 before kickoff, and we'll be there watching.
It sounds lovely.
It does, doesn't it?
I'm hoping I can make it.
I think we're all hoping you can make it.
I am. I really am.
On the pod this week, we'll be joined by Ted Glover here in just a few minutes from Off Tackle Empire. We'll discuss Gophers. We'll discuss Big Ten. Unfortunately, we'll discuss Ohio State because he's a big Ohio State guy. But we'll do a little preview around the Big Ten just in case you need a little more edumacation on what's going on with the rest of the conference. Otherwise, Jermo, Gophers this week. What do we have going on that we can discuss here?
Well, you know, some nice articles in the paper. Obviously, everyone's paying attention with camp going on. Talk a little bit about a guy who's not in camp, Brian Bobeck. We can talk about how he's putting on some pounds after Urban Meyer said he was too small to play center. We got speaking of centers, we got a battle for center.
We got a battle going.
We got a battle. And I feel like it's the – I mean, wouldn't Tim Brewster have said, I mean, about going to battle?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I feel like he would have had a lot to say about this. But
there would have been a battle. I'm guessing there probably wouldn't have been a battle about the battle just to get to the battle if we're talking about Tim Brewster.
Right. No, absolutely. So, I mean, it's a battle within a battle to get to the battle.
Yep.
And the battle is in a desert.
It's win, fight, try, it's play for Brew. That's how he does it.
Win, fight, try, more cowbell. Absolutely. So yeah, we got the center battle between Zach Motla and John Christensen. The rest of the line is pretty much set.
Yep.
So I mean, it looks like things are starting to come together, but I don't know if you noticed this, but, you know, Kill was kind of, sounded like he was pretty optimistic about some things that were going on. You know, we got some good talent. We got some things going on. Marquise looks good. Now it starts to seem like in the last day or so, he's maybe started to hedge his bets a little bit. You know, it's going to be a growing year, some of those kind of things. Maybe that's by design. Maybe he's starting to see some things that the team hasn't, you know, maybe developed this far into camp as he was hoping. But obviously, you know, there's a lot of things that are going on with this team. Things are, I mean, it's a fluid situation, as the dude would say. Some new shit has come to light. With all of the different things going on with the offensive line, Jimmy Jerry going down. You know, we've obviously got the freshman wide receivers coming up that are hopefully going to make an impact. So we'll see what happens. But, you know, it sounds like Jerry, in some sense, might be starting to hedge his bets a little bit, just making sure that nobody's getting their expectations too out of whack.
I to me, that sounds like typical Jerry Kill. You don't want to get to, you know, you want to build the hype over the summer and get people talking and interested about the program. But once we're getting close to game day, you don't want them getting too overconfident. So I like that. I'm down with that.
I like it too. I'm down with Jerry Kill, and I definitely think that it's probably good. You know, part of that I think is not only just talking to the media and setting an expectation level for the fans, but from some standpoint, you have to kind of do that with your team, build your team up early, and then maybe knock them down a little bit. You guys aren't that great. You know, you're going to have to work hard, some of those things. So, you know, whether that plays into the psychological warfare of being a head football coach or not, who knows. But I think it'll be interesting to see how things go the next week here as we do lead up to kickoff.
On the podcast, it's that time where we want to branch out a little bit, take you out of just the Gopher frame of mind and look around the conference, try and get an idea of what we can expect from the rest of the good old B1G. We, of course, get help because you wouldn't expect Jeremo and I to give you much insight on that. We've got Ted Glover from Off Tackle Empire kind enough to join us here. Ted, thanks for coming in to talk to us.
Thanks for having me. Good to be here.
We've had you on, I think, a while back. Remind us again. I know you're a big Ohio State fan, but you have some Minnesota ties. Remind the listeners how that works again.
Yeah, grew up in Minnesota. Tried hard cheering for the Gophers when I was a kid.
It's not easy.
I just couldn't do it. I got to tell you, I was in high school when I moved away. Moved to Columbus, went to Ohio State. That's how I became an Ohio State fan. But when Lou Holtz came to Minnesota, early 80s, I thought, man, this is it. This is going to be it. And then he was gone after 2 years. And then I just focused all my attention back on the Vikings again. So I have there's a soft spot for the Gophers in my heart. Always will be, but it's tough. It's been tough cheering for him my whole life.
You bring up the Vikings, so I'll ask the question, who wins more games this season, the Vikings or the Gophers?
Let's go push. I could see a scenario where both win eight.
Interesting.
Hang on. There might be something wrong with my Skype connection. Did you just say you think the Gophers might win eight games?
Well, let's break their schedule down. Let's look at it. The Gophers had a very manageable non-conference schedule. The most important thing for the Gophers is that we are now 2 years removed from the Tim Brewster era. And I think everybody agrees nothing better could be happening to Gopher football. The Tim Brewster is no longer associated with the program in any way, shape, or form. But UNLV, winnable game. New Hampshire, winnable game. Western Michigan, winnable game. Syracuse, winnable game. That's the momentum. That's 4-0. And at some point, we have to start talking about the Gophers being a respectable team. You look at the recruiting that Jerry Kill's doing, and you look at how well they played at the end of last year, and you can talk yourself into them kind of getting over the hump against Iowa and Iowa City, because Iowa, you know, they've got two new coordinators this year. Who do they have on offense? I mean, every running back problem. Every running back they have gets hurt. James Vandenberg is an inconsistent quarterback. They're learning it's probably a very similar offense than what Ken O'Keefe had, but still a new coordinator. Same thing on defense. You can talk me into the Gophers walking into Iowa City and making it 3 in a row. Now you're talking they're 5-0, and then they got Northwestern at home. Northwestern, I think they can beat, and all of a sudden you're talking, holy crap, the Gophers are 6-0. Now from that, they've got to find two more wins. Well, they've beaten Illinois. They could probably beat Purdue. That's 8 wins right there. Is it kind of far-fetched, you know, based on recent history? Yeah, but it's not out of the question.
See, here's the problem. Here's the problem, though, Ted. You have enough close ties to the Gophers to want them to do well, but you're not close enough to the Gophers that you've been jaded yet.
Fair enough.
And so you could – I actually, when you said the Vikings and the Gophers could come up with the same number of wins, I was thinking, oh, he's thinking 6 is the number. I'm actually more surprised that you're finding 8 wins for the Vikings than you are for the Gophers.
The Vikings are going to be 6-2 at the break. They're going to be 6-2 at the turn.
Look at that.
That's not a guess.
That's a declarative statement.
Wow.
Now, the last 5 weeks of the season for the Vikings, they got to play the Packers twice. They got to play the Bears twice. And they've got, I can't remember, it's another tough game, and I can't remember who it is off the top of my head. Oh, maybe it's the Rams game here in St. Louis. Anyways, they've got a brutal close of the schedule, and getting to 9 or 10 wins, I think, is going to be a tall hill to climb. But I could very easily see them being 6-2 at the break.
Well, I appreciate your opinion about the Gophers, because we're not seeing that level of optimism anywhere else, even within the fan base.
Well, Hill's a great coach. I love the fact, not so much that he's a great coach, but the Gophers made a good hire. I mean, how many times in the past have the Gophers hired a guy that had really no track record of winning football games, other than...
That's happened, believe it or not.
Yeah.
Everything except Lou Holtz.
Yeah. And the results bear it out. They finally get a good coach that knows how to build a program. He's starting to get guys to sign up and come play at Minnesota that 3 years ago, even Tim Brewster, I don't think would have gotten, because I think everybody was just fed up with Brewster's song and dance at that point. I mean, a guy like Jonah Piersig, the huge offensive tackle,
mm-hmm.
three years ago, would you have said, yeah, I can see the Gophers getting a guy like Jonah Piersig. It wouldn't have happened. And now
he'd be going to Madison.
Yeah. Exactly the kind of guy that the Gophers have traditionally lost to Madison or Iowa City.
Exactly. And now those kind of guys are not only considering Minnesota, but coming to Minnesota. And although the recruiting pool is not as deep in Minnesota as it is in, say, Ohio or Texas or whatever, there's still some talent that can be mined out of Minnesota. You know, guys like James Laurinaitis are from Minneapolis. And that left tackle that ended up going to Miami.
Chantrell Henderson.
Yeah, Chantrell Henderson. He was a highly touted recruit. Guys like that, if Kill can start winning at a consistent level, guys like that are going to take a second look in Minnesota, and pretty soon Kill's going to start getting those guys. And before you know it, the Gophers are going to have a downright respectable football program.
Ted, I don't like to admit that we listen to the Iowa blog from time to time, but I know they had you and Graham on a while back, and I thought you put it pretty well as far as the coaching situation here and really around the league, and that's just that we have adults in the room, you know, all of Tim Brewster's shenanigans and just idioms, all his ridiculous crap is gone. We have people who know what they're doing, know how to win, and are running the program properly, and it's just, even 2 years in, it's so refreshing to have this as our coach and our coaching staff compared to what we had under Brewster.
Yeah, and the continuity, I think, is a big thing. Tracy Clays and Matt Limegrover have been with Kill for both over a decade. Both guys were offered jobs elsewhere. They both decided to stay. I think it's great. And you look at the previous regime where there was so much turnover in the coaching staff, and you look at a kid like Adam Weber that that I thought had the tools to be a really good quarterback in the Big Ten, and he just got jobbed on, you know, one new coordinator and one new offense after the other. And now I think it's going to start to play out this year that you see that continuity and you see what's expected year in and year out, and there's really not a lot of flux and there's not a lot of change, and there's guys that really know what they're doing, and these kids are buying into what's happening. And you saw it turn sort of at the end of last year with the big win over Iowa, and then they beat Illinois. I mean, they didn't beat Illinois, they beat up Illinois. And that, you know, Illinois traditionally is a team that puts 6-7 guys in the NFL every year, and the Gophers dominated them on both sides of the ball. I just really like the direction the Gophers are going, and maybe I'm a bit optimistic on 8 wins, but man, I could see it happening. I think it'd be great.
Well, we'd love to see it. Jeff, unless you have any other questions, I think we should switch gears to the Big Ten at large.
Let's switch some gears. I was just going to say that I kind of already missed the Zucker a little bit. Is that wrong?
No. No, if missing the Zucker is wrong, I don't want to be right, gentlemen.
The only people that do miss Zucker are the actual Illinois – or sorry, that don't miss him are the actual Illinois fans.
Yeah. You know, and another thing about Illinois, I like the guy that they hired in Tim Beckman. You know, we talk about the adults in the room. I think Beckman's one of those adults in the room, too. He's got a less inexperienced staff than a guy like Jerry Kill does, but he knows what he's doing. He's pulling in good recruiting classes. He sort of made a fool of himself at the Big Ten media days with that Penn State, are you recruiting Penn State players or not, kind of fiasco. But Beckman's a good coach, too. I mean, look at how better or how much better the coaching overall in the Big Ten has gotten over the last, what, 3 or 4 years. Guys like, yep, Brewster and Zucker gone. John L. Smith is gone. And now, ironically enough, both John L. Smith and Tim Brewster are in the SEC. Yeah. Isn't that funny? And guys like Jerry Kill and Tim Beckman, and even Ohio State, they lose Jim Tressel, but if it's even possible, they even upgraded with Urban Meyer. Rich Rodriguez is gone in Michigan, and Brady Hoeksen. I mean, the caliber of coaching has done, I think, overall a 180 in the Big Ten, and I think you're going to start seeing the effects of that on the field in the next year or two.
By the way, Jeff and I have a little drinking game going that we didn't tell you about, Ted, but every time you say Urban Meyer, we both have to drink. So, Jeff, go ahead and take your shot. I took mine. Wow. While Ted was still talking.
Ted, we'll give you the opportunity here to get us drunk and also to talk about your new football coach, because I know despite not being eligible for the postseason, I got to imagine Buckeye fans feel like you guys are, to use an old-school term, just over the moon to be able to go from someone as successful as Tressel to somebody as successful as Urban Meyer.
Yeah, Urban Meyer, Urban Meyer, Urban Meyer.
Oh, I should have taken a half day tomorrow.
You shouldn't have said anything. I'll drink along too. No, I really, when something like Tatgate happens at a big school, happened in Michigan with Rich Rodriguez. You know, you had the whole USC debacle. Lord knows what's going to be the end state at State College when that finally plays itself out. And when the Buckeyes went 6-7 last year, you're thinking, man, it was a great run. We're going to be able to watch a lot of cool replays on the Big Ten Network for the next 3 or 4 years, but it's going to be pretty miserable on the field. But that whole feeling went away the day Meyer was signed as a head coach. I can't tell you how this feeling of panic that was sort of sweeping over the whole fan base just sort of went away. Like, good deal. We're gonna take our medicine this year. I'm not saying we shouldn't, but he's already recruiting well, and I think they're gonna have a great season this year, and they're gonna be right in the thick of it all next year. It's best possible scenario that could happen for Ohio State if you're an Ohio State fan.
So, I mean, obviously in that division, and I forget, is that the Legends division? Ohio State's in the Legends division, right? No, Leaders.
No, Ohio State's in the Leaders. And the easy way, for me, the easy way to remember it is Michigan is a legend in their own mind. So they're in the Legends division, and every team that begins with an M or an N plus Iowa is in the Legends division. Perfect. Everybody else is in the Leaders.
Perfect. Okay.
That's not a bad way to go.
That is a great way to go. So in the Leaders division, I mean, is it just a foregone conclusion that Wisconsin's going to win that division?
Yeah. I mean, who can seriously challenge them? Purdue?
They're Purdue.
Six-win team.
Oh, but they have great quarterbacks, though. We're hearing about how great their quarterback situation is. Come on. They're just going to put all three of them on the field at the same time, and they're just going to win.
Yeah, if you got one quarterback, you got a chance. If you got two quarterbacks, you got none. If you got four quarterbacks, you're Purdue. It's Purdue. And then Danny Hope is the only coach in the Big Ten that I look at as a game day coach and go, I don't know about that guy. I mean, and 2 years ago you had Brewster, you had all these sideline buffoons that couldn't outcoach a good high school guy, and they're all gone. And now Danny Hope, I think, is probably the most tactically deficient game day coach in the Big Ten, and he doesn't have the most talent, and that's not a good combination. So we'll see what happens. Purdue's a 6-win team, 6-7 win team perpetual, and they'll probably be that again this year. I just don't see them unless Wisconsin completely collapses because Danny O'Brien has a year like he had at Maryland last year. I don't see anybody even coming close to the Badgers. I mean, I can see Ohio State winning more games, but obviously they're ineligible, so they're not going to Indianapolis.
Do you see Wisconsin? Here's my question, though, because you talk about Hope and being a guy who's going to get Purdue only so far. Is it just my, you know, terrible Minnesota bias that I don't believe Bielema is the great coach in the world? Like, that team last year, I feel like, should have just been an absolute all-timer with what they had, and they lost, like, three games. It just feels like it's there, but they're never going to quite get over the hump, or am I just totally biased and wrong?
No, you're not biased and wrong. I've said the same thing to anybody who would listen to me, and I think you're like maybe the fourth and fifth people that have. So thanks for doing that. But, I mean, yeah, they had Russell Wilson, they had Monty Ball, and they had a pretty good defense. I mean, they had it there waiting for them. I mean, it was an all-time, potentially all-time great team. They should have run the table. They should have run everybody off the field. They should not have lost to Michigan State. They should not have lost to Ohio State. They should have kicked the hell out of Ohio State last year, and they let Ohio State hang around, and they ended up losing to them. And then they got to the Rose Bowl, and they just got that the defense. I could see the defense giving up a lot of points to Oregon. Oregon's a great team, but Oregon's defense is nothing to write home about. And Wisconsin should have just pounded them. They should have had two Rose Bowl wins in the last 2 years, and it's probably the most disappointing 2 years for good seasons from a Big Ten team not named Ohio State and Michigan in quite a few years. I mean, they should have just run everybody out of the stadium last year, every single week.
I remember watching the TCU game too, and it's like, why aren't they running the ball? Like, they have literally an NFL-sized and an ability offensive line with the great running backs. It's like, you guys have this advantage that these teams just don't see with the size in the running game, and they're throwing the ball, they're doing all these other things. I just never got it.
I didn't either. I mean, and 2 years ago in the Rose Bowl, they should have just given the ball to John Clay and Monte Ball until TCU cried uncle. And that would have happened in the middle of the third quarter if Paul Christ had done that. And they didn't. I mean, they just – yeah, Bielema's not gonna win any game day battlefield general awards, that's for sure. But he usually doesn't have to because he's got generally superior talent. But when he gets into a tight game, I don't know if he panics or what the deal is, but he just does not make – the best decisions, and it's too bad because I know you guys probably don't like to hear this, but I was kind of rooting for Wisconsin to do well last year just simply for the fact I'm sick of the Big Ten getting panned on the national stage, and they just dropped the ball and they shouldn't have.
I don't think you're alone in that. I think probably, I mean, you know, I once they got to the Rose Bowl, I wasn't cheering for them, but I think as the season went on, part of me wanted to see them do that well and really blow people out, because I really did want to see Wisconsin and LSU play. I thought that could have been a good matchup, but
I think they would have run LSU out of the stadium, personally. Yeah, that's just me.
Been fun. All right, so let's switch gears, Ted, and let's go ahead and move over to the Legends Division, because that's obviously what we care about. And just give us your thoughts, little stream of consciousness on how you think things are going to go in the Legends Division this year.
I think Michigan State's the team to beat. Even though they lost a guy like Kirk Cousins, they're going to have such a good defense. I mean, man, they just have such a good defense. The only thing that makes me hesitate picking Michigan State over Michigan, and I kind of go back and forth on this, is that they've beaten Michigan 4 years in a row, and I don't know that they'll beat Michigan 5 years in a row. It just seems weird that they would, but I think they're a better team than Michigan. But the game's in the Big House, you know, they haven't won in a long time, so Michigan's kind of going to be amped up for it. I think it's going to come down to Michigan State and Michigan and the Legends. Iowa just doesn't impress me this year, but Iowa doesn't impress me any year, and they always seem to end up doing pretty well. Because that's just Iowa. They always win a game or two they shouldn't, and then they, you know, lose a game or two that they shouldn't. Minnesota, we've talked about Minnesota. I think they're going to be better than people expect. Nebraska, I can't take Nebraska seriously as long as Taylor Martinez is their quarterback. Northwestern, I like Northwestern, but God, they're overmatched. I mean, they have a couple of good players at a couple of positions, but their defenses just get smoked all the time. So I'm going with Michigan State, and then Michigan, and then probably Nebraska, and then maybe Minnesota. Surprise, right there, right behind Nebraska. I think Minnesota will be better than everybody thinks.
I hope so. Talk about Michigan State, and that's the team. I'm kind of already sick of the Michigan talk with them being back before they've really done much of anything. For me, Michigan State's schedule comes down to that last couple games in October and the first of November, when they go at Michigan, at Wisconsin, and then home Nebraska 3 weeks in a row. I'm guessing that's going to decide that division as far as who's going to go from the Legends, because that's a tough stretch right there.
Yeah, and then you add the Iowa game, because they always have a hard time against Iowa too. So that's four, and then Northwestern always plays just about everybody pretty tough. I mean, Northwestern went into Lincoln and won there last year when nobody thought they would. So that's a tough conference schedule. And then they open up with Boise, and then they got Notre Dame 2 weeks after that. So Michigan State's got a tough schedule, but I just. Tell me who's got a better defense in the Big Ten than Michigan State. And it always comes down to defense. I mean, Michigan State, the last two or three years, has done a great job of containing Denard Robinson. And not a lot of other defenses can say they've done that. And they've pretty much bottled him up. And I think they'll just do it again this year. I mean, again, Denard Robinson, you know, when he gets pressured and you make him throw the ball, you know, other than Notre Dame that played the let's not cover anybody defense at the end of the game last year, he doesn't do well. So I just, Michigan State is, they're good. I like Mark D'Antonio. He was Ohio State's defensive coordinator, built a good program at Cincinnati, gave it over to Brian Kelly. Great coach. I just think Michigan State's the team to beat in that division.
You talked about us having an issue with cheering for Wisconsin against Oregon. Honest question, Michigan against Alabama for the first couple weeks of the season, who are you cheering for?
Oh, I hope Alabama curb stomps Michigan. here's the deal. I'm cool. I want other Big Ten teams to do well. Don't get me wrong. But I don't know about you guys, but I am fed up with this conference allegiance this and conference allegiance that. The SEC started it, and nothing makes me laugh harder than Vanderbilt fans doing the SEC chant at a football game. Come on, you're Vanderbilt. No, just because you're in the SEC doesn't mean you're good. And I grew up hating Michigan. I grew up hating Wisconsin. I grew up hating Iowa. and I'm not going to cheer for them on a regular basis just because somebody thinks I should who lives in Atlanta. I'm just not going
to
do it.
Yeah. They tried to do the SEC chant at Mississippi State, but they couldn't spell it. I don't even know where I say those things. I have nothing against Mississippi State, but I apologize to the Bulldogs.
Well, you should apologize to the Bulldogs because they've got Tim Brewster now.
Yeah.
I saw that. One thing you'll know, you're going to have some hot chili down in Mississippi State. They're going to know how hot their chili is when it's cooking down there now. They've got that going for them.
Yeah, you know, so we gave them hot chili, and Arkansas's getting their piss hot with John L. I mean, come on. This is working out better than even I thought. John L. Smith and Tim Brewster are in the SEC.
I just love for that 30 or 40 seconds that Brewster had the broadcasting job, and he was like, well, you know, I'm almost as good as this as I am at coaching. And it's like, you weren't good at coaching, so I doubt you're going to be good at this. But all right, buddy.
Oh, Tim Brewster, how we miss you so.
I know. Well, he'll live on as the receivers coach, I guess. But
yeah.
And it's a quick thing on Nebraska, too. Are they just trying to add to their level of difficulty by not finding a better quarterback than Taylor Martinez? Like, do they just figure, like, we don't need to throw. That's fine. We'll just beat the teams we can beat and win 8 games. And then when we got to throw, you know, we'll just add to that level of difficulty for it.
Nebraska's kind of in between the rock and a hard place, I think, with Taylor Martinez, because he had a pretty good year as a freshman. I think everybody would agree with that. And then he sort of. And now they're so far down the road with him, I don't know that they can get rid of him, if that makes any sense. He's popular. He's popular in Nebraska, and he can do some really good things. He's just not real consistent. I'm not a big fan of Martinez overall. I mean, I think he does a real good job playing a good game when he's ahead, but when he's behind and you put the onus on him to win the game, other than maybe the Ohio State, that Ohio State game jumps out at me from last year. But I'm having a hard time coming up with another game when Taylor Martinez went out and won it for him. And that's kind of Taylor Martinez. And I don't know that Nebraska is going to get over the hump unless they've got a guy that can take them if they go down by 2 touchdowns and come back and win, especially in the Big Ten. I mean, because our defenses are traditionally pretty doggone good. So, you know, they just give me the feel of a 9-win team, like they sort of always have been, and since Bo Pelini's been around. So I think that's about where they'll be, you know, mid-teen ranking by the end of the year probably again.
You know, since we're talking about Nebraska, kind of an off-the-wall question, but still Nebraska-related. I was just thinking while Ted was talking about the fact that this is only going to be Nebraska's second year in the Big Ten. How good did the Big Ten do bringing in Nebraska with conference expansion? Am I the only one that it sort of feels like Nebraska's just been around forever at this point?
In terms of, like, being in the Big Ten forever?
Yeah, like, it just feels like they belong in the Big Ten.
It feels right, yeah.
And, like, there was really no transition whatsoever.
I agree. I mean, look, they're a Midwest school. We're all Midwest schools, with the exception of, you could maybe argue Penn State, kind of more East Coast than Midwest. But Penn State's been around for so long that I think most of the Big Ten fans don't know of a time when Penn State wasn't in the Big Ten, which is kind of weird for me because I'm, you know, really old and stuff. But, it just seemed like a natural fit from day one. And you've got all these – I can't even tell you what teams are in what conferences anymore. I mean, with the Big 12 and the WAC, didn't the WAC just disband? Was it the WAC that just disbanded or was it the Mountain
West? They're holding the funeral for the WAC, I think, later this week, and that'll be all they wrote for it.
It actually works out well for me because I had the WAC in my death pool at work.
Did you really?
Yeah. So,
wow. See, I had
choice for you.
I had Donald Trump, too, though, so that one's probably not going to work out.
I had Madonna in the Big 12, so doggone it. Oh, well. They just have been, and I thought the Big Ten did a very good job when they first announced Nebraska coming into the conference, and everybody kind of thought it would be, you know, this year would be the first year, and they really worked overtime to get them to start last year, which I thought was a great move. And personally, for me, I think 12 teams is enough. I know this conference, you know, super conference realignment palooza and all this stuff is going on. The SEC went to 14 teams, and the Pac is now 12 teams, maybe looking at 14. I'm not sure. It's like Tuesday, sir. No, it's Thursday. So I don't know if they're at 14 teams this week or not. And then the Mountain West is there. Or wait, no, is it the Big East or is the Mountain West that has teams from coast to coast?
Maybe they should just join together. Is what they should
do. Good Lord. I don't know. I mean, I can't keep track of all of it. So I just decided to focus on the Big Ten that now has 12 teams. And I think they're 12 very good teams, culturally, academically, and athletically. I think we're the best, the most balanced conference of all of them.
And I would argue the strongest. I mean, I know SEC has been the best on the field the last 5 years, but man, did Missouri, like, that was their big thing. You know, the Big Ten added Nebraska, it's 12, we're done, it's fine. And then the SEC felt reasons to add Missouri? Like, it just seems so strange. It just seems like the Big Ten is in such a better position that way with where they're at as far as numbers and strength.
And I feel bad for Missouri because teams like Florida and Georgia – And every other team in the SEC, Alabama, they won't go outside the Mason-Dixon come October. So Missouri will play all their games on the road. So that's just kind of sucks for them. I got to tell you, I live just outside of St. Louis, and I don't see, and maybe I'm missing it, but I listen to sports radio here going to work and coming home from work, and I just don't. I hear them talking about it, but I just don't feel the fired up. We're in the SEC. I feel the vibe I get is, man, we're in the SEC and we're going to get crushed. And I kind of think they are, and they don't fit. Granted, they were kind of a pro slavery state in way back in the day, but they're Midwest through and through. I don't know.
The sad thing too for them is they lobbied to get into the Big Ten,
and they
really didn't even get a sniff. Mm-mm. And then, you know, the Big Ten really being the conference that started all of this conference realignment fiasco, kind of pushed down the first domino. We're going to bring in Nebraska, and then now we're going to just let everybody else scramble. I think that whole scenario really speaks to kind of what the Big Ten is about and why the SEC just loves to pile on when we are not doing well when it comes to a national championship level programs, because, you know, the Big Ten is kind of always that's kind of always been our modus operandi, if you will.
Yeah, I mean, look, the SEC is the better football conference. I think you'd have to be really, really biased to think otherwise. But I think athletically overall, the Big Ten is the better conference. I think we have a stronger, we feel stronger basketball teams. I mean, SEC has Kentucky, but that's it. Mm-hmm. We've got six or seven legitimately strong basketball programs. The SEC does not. We've got six or seven legitimately good football programs, and you could argue the SEC does too. Academics, I mean, we kind of stand head and shoulders above everybody. I think it's a great time to be in the Big Ten. I think it's a great time to be a Big Ten fan. And I hope that with this expansion stuff that the Big Ten thinks long and hard if they're gonna do it anymore. I mean, maybe I could get on board with Notre Dame, but then who do you supplant that with? I mean, what do you guys think? Do you think Notre Dame is even worth it looking at, or staying at 12? I'm comfortable with 12, but that's just me.
I just want to say, first of all, that former Gopher athletic director Joel Maturi is very upset at you that you didn't mention Director's Cup standings and how strong the Big Ten is, because that's important stuff, Ted.
You're solid takeaway there, and I hope I don't get a stern worded email from Mr. Maturi.
That's important stuff right there. Yeah, I think it's staying at 12 for as long as it goes. If everything blows up and everybody goes to 16 and it all goes away, maybe look at adding something else. But I mean, it's just at a point in, like, you know, they expanded because they thought it was the right thing to do and the best thing for the conference, not because, hey, let's make a money grab and do it. They made the right choice with Nebraska. Everybody else I see doing it for other motives, and the Big Ten's at a point where they don't need to expand anymore at this point, so I think they're comfortable where they're at.
Yeah, I think Delaney – I thought Delaney was genius in getting Nebraska and stopping. And the shockwaves that he sent throughout college football when he said, you know what, I think the Big Ten's looking at expanding in the next 18 months. If you guys remember, everybody flipped out. I mean, everybody – flipped out. I mean, the Big 12 darn near imploded. SEC was, I mean, the SEC was pretty stable. They played their cards right, but I think they expanded just for the sake of expansion when they got Texas A&M and Missouri. I don't really see any value added for the conference by adding those two teams. They're okay teams. They're okay programs. You could maybe argue now the SEC has a recruiting footprint in the state of Texas. But I would counter that with, well, Texas pretty much still dominates the state of Texas for recruiting. So I don't know. I think the SEC didn't hurt themselves, but they didn't do themselves any favors either. Where I thought the Big Ten, by adding a great program, you know, historically great program like Nebraska, going to the Big Ten Conference Championship game, extending our season that extra week, just did nothing but good things for the conference.
Well, let's wrap it here with this. Then let's get your prediction on who's winning the title and going to the Rose Bowl this year. I'm guessing we have Wisconsin on one side, Michigan State on the other. Do we see a repeat of last year with Wisconsin going again, or is this the year Michigan State goes to the Rose Bowl?
I'm going with Michigan State. I think there's too much hype around Danny O'Brien. Last year, I thought that the hype was legitimate with Russell Wilson. Mm-hmm. I thought the guy was a great quarterback. What has Danny O'Brien done other than go 3-9 and wear a terrible football uniform at Maryland?
You didn't like the two-tone helmet? Yeah, Nebraska's quarterbacking history Wisconsin's up until the last 2 years was pretty average. It's that what they were known for. It's not like everybody that comes in is going to be Russell Wilson every year.
No, and I just – I'm sorry, Danny O'Brien just does not do anything for me. Monty Ball had – I personally thought the guy should have won the Heisman last year. I thought he had a great season last year.
Hey, Ted. Monte, please.
Monte. I'm sorry. Monte. Tomato. Okay. Mr. Ball should have won the Heisman last year, and he's not going to this year because apparently he gets jumped in Madison for fights at frat parties or whatever.
He was drinking Budweiser. You can't do that. You can't do that in Wisconsin. It's Miller Lite all the way, man.
You can't. Yeah, that's a Miller territory. I think he's going to have a good year. I don't think he's going to have 18 or 1,900 yards rushing like he did last year. If Wisconsin couldn't do it last year with Russell Wilson, like I said, they're not going to do it with Danny O'Brien this year. I just like Michigan State. I'm saying Michigan State. It's either going to be Michigan or Michigan State. I'm still – leery about whether or not Michigan State can beat the Wolverines 5 years in a row. But if they can, they're going to the Rose Bowl. And somehow, if Michigan State wins the Big Ten and gets the automatic BCS berth, they will somehow get screwed at the BCS Bowl, and the Michigan State fans will howl for a fourth year in a row, and it will be epically funny.
It's only right.
Wouldn't it be, though?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Pick, we're going to send Purdue. Purdue's going to go to the Rose Bowl, and you guys get to go to the Outback Bowl.
Listen, we really like Danny Hope's mustache, and they have a lot of quarterbacks. We're just going to send them. We just feel like that's the better choice for everybody. We're just going to send them.
They can play a different quarterback every quarter, and you guys can't. So we're going to send them to the Rose Bowl. And they haven't been since – when did Purdue go? Was it 2000?
Yeah.
With Breeze, I think?
With Breeze, yep.
Yeah. Okay. All right. I was going to say 1950, but that would have been a kind of a lame joke. So. So, yeah, that's what I got. I got Michigan State, I think, and Wisconsin with Michigan State winning and going to the Rose Bowl.
All right. I think that's a fair call. I think it's Wisconsin's got the automatic bid at this point, and I agree with you. I think it comes down to Michigan State and Michigan for that last spot, and I personally would like to see the Spartans since it can't be Minnesota this year. But I also like your 8-win prediction for the Gophers. I'd love to see that come true, but we'll see what happens here.
What do you think? 50-50 on that or 30-70 or what? 10-90?
Oh man, I don't argue with your rationale. I think there's definitely some winnable games, but I feel like maybe that, you know, if we still had the Tim Brewster hype machine as a coach, then we'd be talking about going 12-0 in Rose Bowl. But with Jerry Kill, I think we've learned to think like Jerry Kill and dial back the expectations a little bit, and try and be a little more reserved with it. So I am saying 6 with confidence, but I think if everything went well, I don't think 8 is outlandish. But then again, neither would 4 or 5 wins at the same time. So I'm just going to play it safe and say 6.
Yeah, I think I predicted 6-6 over at off tackle umpire, and I really think the Gophers, all seriousness, the Gophers are a bowl caliber team, and just really like Phil's doing it. I got a good guy for OTE right. Long after on board, and just a no-nonsense, straightforward guy. Great for Gophers. Great.
Definitely. Well, Ted, we appreciate the time. We'll be reading you there on Off Topical Empire, and the best of luck. Well, you know what? The Gophers won't play Ohio State, so absolutely the best of luck to the Buckeyes this season. This is when we don't have that conflict.
Awesome. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Big thanks to Ted Glover of Off Tackle Empire. If you're a Vikings fan, he's also one of the writers over at Vikings blog, The Daily Norseman. So you can check him out there. One of these, he's a part of the Triangle of Authority at the Daily Norseman, as they call it. And like Jeremo, a blogger and a writer and contributor over at Off Tackle Empire. Jeremo, I like his prediction of 8 wins for the Gophers. That's bold. It's aggressive.
I think. He's probably not close enough to the program to be jaded yet, so I think that's a very exciting prediction. I don't have a lot of confidence in it. I like Ted. I think he's a smart man. But, you know, I still think 7 wins is the ceiling. I don't think I'm alone in that, but I mean, it's great that that he looks at the schedule and thinks that there's a – I love that there's somebody as knowledgeable as him who thinks that there's a possibility of that.
I'm saying 6 for the season if you had to make a prediction. Isn't that what you said? I'm trying to think of what you said on Off Tackle Empire.
Yeah, I mean 6-6 was my prediction. I think 5-7 is the range, so, you know, with 7 being the ceiling. But I do think 6 wins is – realistic. I'm still a little nervous to go ahead and say that that's probable. I'm anxious, obviously, like anybody. I'm anxious to see how the first game goes, and see how we can come out and hopefully, you know, really take UNLV behind the woodshed. But we'll see what happens. I think obviously expectations change as the season goes on. Everybody's real optimistic right now. But we'll see what happens. I think we all have done this long enough and been fans of this team long enough to know that we've got to take this optimism with a little bit of grain of salt. I actually was talking to my cousin over the weekend, who obviously, like me, you know, grew up going to Gopher games. It was his dad, my uncle, who got both of us into it, and he asked me what I thought about the season coming up, and I told him, I said, you know, I'm actually getting a little bit nervous about how optimistic I am. I'm always, you know, fairly optimistic going into the season, but I'm actually starting to get a little bit nervous about my level of optimism because we've been here before.
Yep.
It seems like we're here every year, but yeah, it's obviously it's a wait-and-see game. And we've all got hope that some exciting things can happen.
Well, yeah, we'll have the prediction piece I think next week on the blog. You can see that. We'll obviously give everybody a chance to make their own predictions as well in the comments. See where we think the Gophers will shake out. The podcast next week will obviously preview UNLV. We're going to try and get somebody on that knows their Vegas football, because I got to be honest, I know nothing other than they've been terrible as far as UNLV football. So we'll get a little bit educated on that. And then, that should lead us up, Jeremo. We're a week away from the season starting.
It's unbelievable. It, I can't believe it that a week from right now, it's we're going to be watching Gopher football.
It's that time of year, ladies and gentlemen. It's the best of times and the best of times, really. We're almost to it. So again, it's next week. We'll be here talking more about the UNLV game. We'll get you wrapped up or get you ready for that one and the start of football season. We'll be into it. So stay tuned for the blog for more previews and other stuff coming up. As always, thanks for listening. Report JD Mill. I am Jeff Rick, and stay classy and go Gophers.
Sky you, Ma.